historically, we would have the we would have five ICU beds and three high dependency beds, which are a step down from ICU. At the moment, we have capacity to go up to 14 ICU beds and two high dependency beds. And this morning, we're running with six of those 14 in use. We also are at an advanced stage in having an additional four beds, ICU beds, being brought online, and we've got equipment coming in, scheduled to come in this week to actually open those beds. Now, again, as you'll appreciate, there's lots of different bits of equipment, so the media, in a lot of media reports, you'll hear people talking about ventilators, which are absolutely critical, but there's also monitoring equipment, syringe drivers, etc. So we have a daily we have a daily meeting of our coordination, our crisis management team within the hospital. We meet every morning to pull together all the various strands of activity that need to be undertaken, and we have a number of subcommittees within that. One of those is our critical care subcommittee. So they're liaising with our with HSE supplies and with national team and with our colleagues in sales to keep that equipment flowing in to get those extra beds open as quickly as possible.
Do you have enough equipment for nurses to protect them?
Okay, so now you're talking about, you want to move on to PPE as opposed to...
We're short on time, unfortunately,
yeah.
Sean.
So, so just to finish the ICU bit, it just says we also have got staff refresher training and upskilling ongoing as well, because it's not just equipment, but staff.
Excellent.
In terms of the equipment in PPE, what's called PPE, personal protective equipment, we have just about sufficient volumes. We are right up against the wire in some, for some aspects of PPE on a daily basis, but we've got incoming flows of that equipment. I'd like to have a lot more. I've stocked up within the hospital, and as you will have heard, there was a flight came in from China yesterday with large supplies to the HSE. Some of that has already landed in Letterkenny, and our people in stores at the moment are going through that and identifying what equipment is what's been supplied to us.
I've been contacted by a number of nurses who they have some equipment, but the concern they're being asked to use it, like the masks, for example, being asked to wipe them down when that's not necessarily best practice. Was that the case? Is that still the case?
Okay, so first of all, no, it's not the case. Nobody's been asked to wipe masks down. What we did ask was that goggles that were used, that where we have staff using goggles in interactions with patients, that the staff were being issued with a pair of goggles at the start of their shift. They were being asked to wipe them with cleaning wipes, sanitizing wipes between patients, and at the end of the shift, they put those back into the box and they go back for full thermal decontamination within our CSSD, and then get reissued and sealed pack out for the next shift. Ideally, we'd like to be having thermal disinfection between every use, but there isn't enough to do that at the moment, and the infection control team advice was that it was we had a safe mechanism to wipe them between individual patient uses. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in the event that they got particularly heavy soiled or splattered, they will go straight back for disinfection.
Okay. Now, how are you in terms of staff, in terms of staff becoming ill or suspected of being ill? Is that impacting on you at the moment?
That is impacting on us, and again, we've been looking to working with our colleagues in the community service to have the healthcare staff, both within the hospital and outside the hospital, prioritised in terms of testing, so that we get people back to work where it's safe and appropriate to do so, as quick we get them back to work as quickly as possible. Again, we've got our own processes that we're reviewing staff and where necessary. Swabbing staff, also reviewing symptom management, and we've got a process through HR to actually ensure that those staff that are have maybe had contacts or have been abroad and have no symptoms can be brought back to work and supervised and monitored on an ongoing basis to make sure that they don't develop symptoms.
Okay.
Again, throughout, and I suppose throughout both of those processes, and we talk about PPE and we talk about this, it's absolutely critical that we protect our staff, and that is one of our highest priorities. Staff, protecting our staff and protecting our patients are there at the top of the list. If we don't protect our staff, we can't deliver the service to our patients, and we've got very committed and dedicated staff who fully deserve that level of protection and everything we can do to ensure that happens.
For sure. Now, but there is a surge anticipated. I don't know how many cases, generally speaking, it would take to fill your capacity, presumably what, somewhere around 300 or 400 county-wide cases, I don't know.
But you're talking in those sort of levels.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's never more important that we do everything we can to ensure we don't get to that level, so that those that require those ICU beds can do so, and that we don't have staff being put into situations where difficult decisions have to be made. That's within our power. It's literally in our hands, actually.
And I couldn't emphasise that enough. So again, in terms of reassuring the community, there is a lot of plan, there's a lot of work going on in the hospital at the moment to create not just ICU capacity, but also capacity outside of ICU for patients who require hospital care but don't require ventilation at this stage, and trying to ensure that we keep them as well as possible and avoid them deteriorating to the stage they need ventilation. We've actually zoned the hospital, Greg, and people have seen from very early, we were the first hospitals to have very clear partitioning of our emergency department into symptomatic zones and non-symptomatic zones. We've now zoned our wards as well, and we've, as of this week, the teams are split so they don't actually cover both areas. It took some time to organise our major changes to our rosters because this is a 24/7 service, and we also need to be aware that people will still be ill for reasons other than COVID, so we need to make sure that they receive the appropriate level of care.
Unfortunately, you weren't available to a little bit later, so the time pressure is not all on me, but I think you wanted to talk about the community response just in the last minute that we have.
I did, again, back to your point, every day that we buy without being overwhelmed gives us that better opportunity to keep plan and be more prepared. Social distancing, coughing and sneezing etiquette, absolutely critical. We're really dependent on the community to buy us every 24 hours, and every 24 hours will make a difference in saving lives. I would also like to acknowledge there's a lot of community effort with the County Council, with the LYIT, with various community groups continuing to support us in terms of both infrastructure, and you mentioned PPE. We've got teachers in the college and in the county using 3D printers to help us produce visors locally while we're waiting for supplies to come in from abroad. So there's a lot of work ongoing across all the institutions and the other agencies. Okay. At Garda Síochána, our colleagues in community health, are all being hugely supportive. And each one of those efforts and contributions actually go to building a better and more resilient service locally within the community. I'd also like to acknowledge the Chamber of Commerce as well for their support. Okay. We have put out an appeal for any businesses that have got hand sanitizer because they're closed, they no longer need to be able to donate that to the hospital. It's absolutely critical that we get it in.